Welcome, everyone. I'm Alfred Landermont Weber, and it's a distinct privilege to be here today on September 12, 2022, coming to us from Poland, a great world activist in the area of stopping covert neural manipulation and directed energy weapons, Magnus Olsson. Welcome, Magnus.
Thank you very much, Alfred. Thank you.
Yeah, I just want to take a moment and give some background here. I've known and worked with Magnus a long time and with his coalition, ELKACH, the European coalition, and I have great empathy for Magnus and what he's going through now, because in October of 1977, and this is documented on my websites at exopolitics.com, I personally was targeted by neural manipulation and directed energy weapons while meeting with an assistant secretary of defense at the inner ring of the Pentagon in October 1977. And that was done because I was assisting and had the consent of the presidency, the administration of President Jimmy Carter, to start a particular project that the Pentagon was opposed to. And so they used directed energy weapons, and it was very painful. And so Magnus, today he will describe a great deal, and he is under some pain due to the targeting and due to his great planetary work. So I ask you to just follow this and to understand that these crimes against humanity and genocide, as defined in the International Criminal Court statute, is being carried out by this deep state. So, Magnus, I just wanted to say that, and I wanted to welcome you to this interview and to ask you if you could introduce yourself, because I introduced you from my perspective for those who don't know your work. Thank you.
Yes, thank you for that introduction, Alfred. I can tell a bit about myself when I was 30 years of age. This actually started, and I'm 52 years of age today. I was a very successful businessman, actually, for my age, especially. and then this weapons, which I never heard about, even in my whole life, I couldn't even dream about that they existed, started to work upon my human brain, and it was very, very difficult in the beginning of this. They went on me very hard. So it is a weapon that can kill, that can torture, that can keep you on a lower level of being, so to speak, temporary, I would say, because these weapons are neurological weapons, and they are working upon all frequencies we have in our minds, which is a lot, and this is something that that I had to figure out myself at that time. At that time, it was nothing on the internet about this. today you can just pretty easily find what a targeted individual is, which is the name of being in this situation. And what I did then was that I barely could survive the first 3 years. It was so bad. So it was a miracle, more or less, to survive. But I did, and I worked on, and I came to the point where I what we will go into now, what I did to try to do some change about the situation. So this is the introduction about me as a human. I have also two kids, and I had a wonderful wife at this time, and all of this was shattered, and everything was more or less upside down. So I had a hard time. But let's go now and hear what we have done and what we did, what I did and what we did.
Right, right. Well, thank you. So you went ahead and decided to take proactive steps and form a coalition. And when was that coalition started, and with whom, and what was the coalition called?
The coalition is called European Coalition Against Covert Harassment. And the former people that was starting this coalition was Ronnie Kilde, which was at that time doctor of Northern Finland, not just a small district of the Northern Finland. She was a very good human being, and she was targeted very badly as well, just as me in the same situation. Then we had a third party that was in the starting process, and that was the lawyer Henning Witte, which is not targeted by these weapons. But what he have done was a lot of research, so he know that this was possible. And he wanted to also make a change, and Ronnie, me, and Henning was the formers of this coalition, the European Coalition Against Covert Harassment. And we started up in Stockholm 14 years ago.
Ago. Yeah, I just want to take a moment, and we'll share screen just a moment, to show everyone the website of your cyber tortures. So just to, you know, it'll take a moment and then we'll come back. Let me, this is just to show everyone. Can you see that there, the cyber torture
Yes, website. I see the first page. Yes.
And what is the website again for this?
This is cybertorture.com, cyber-torture.com.
Good. I just wanted people to see that as we go further, more now, into the interview. Now, you were able in the coalition, with yourself and Ronnie Kilda, She was the first health official from Finland, right? She was quite a distinguished person, correct?
Yes, that's correct. She was very famous for being an outspoken person that actually spoke about her targeting directly from the beginning, just like I did as well. And not the first 3 years I could not, because I was so hard attacked. So I was barely
There,
able
but
to
yeah,
function.
but what I'm saying is that Raunikilde was the health minister of Finland, was a health officer of Finland. She was a national figure and had a national office in Finland, so they were attacking national figures and government
Yes,
officials. Yeah,
correctly.
yeah, yeah. Now, you were able then with the coalition to arrange the first conference on this subject in Europe in Brussels. Do you want to describe how this came about and when this happened?
Yes, this was approximately 9 years ago, and we did this together with other organizations, but we were actually I invited William Binney, which was the technical director of NSA and became a whistleblower himself. So he knows what this was all about from the beginning. And he was accepting my invitation and was actually speaking on the first conference we had in Europe. Yes. Yeah, that was of a very, very great importance that we had such a person, and Raunikilde and the lawyer Henning Vitter. So we were very, very distinguished people, all of us. I was a very, very young businessman that had to stop my business. My whole business and everything went out of it because I was very, very badly targeted in the beginning. So after a few years, when we came about to start up the coalition and then having the first conference about the subject, that was a great success for us, I would say, yes.
Right. So, what were some of the outcomes of the first conference? What did you produce, and what went out there?
It went a lot of this subject at that time, as you know, was space invaders, more or less. I mean, it was a little bit out of the topic at the moment. At the moment, no one knows about the world, about the space, about the inner space of our minds, which is also an enormous space, which they are invading. And what the outcome was that we was able to produce a couple of good videos that was spread, and the topic started to grow from there, so to speak. It was from zero, so the first conference was maybe not like It was attended by a lot of targeted individuals, so it was full of people and was a complete success in that manner. But the newspapers were not directly. Some smaller alternative papers wrote about this, yes, but not no, no big dragons, so to speak.
Right, but it had a function of bringing together a community and of putting the issue on the world agenda and of alerting the community of targeted individuals that they were not alone. Wouldn't you say that?
Exactly. And that was maybe the reason in the first round. In the first round, together us, so we could do things together. Because before we were not even able to get together. So this became like the first so to speak in Europe at least. Functional conference that could from there it went on and on and on with the bigger and bigger interviews and so on. So it was a wake up conference, I would like to call it. For people who were targeted, who didn't know that there was other people that was targeted, which I didn't know in the beginning, the first 3 years. It took me a long time to understand that this was thousands, hundreds of thousands of people that was actually victimized by this terrible weaponry. Which you can't, so to speak, run away from. It is a weapon that is connected to your skull. Actually, the main strobe goes directly in here, and some people say that you can actually, if you put your one hand here, you can feel around this area a little bit of irritation, I would like to call it. So this weaponry is the sentient world simulation. It was actually started up long before that time even. So this was already developed at a certain level. So it was pretty advanced from the beginning, in my case at least. So yes, that is what we did and why we did it.
Well, now after that, you went to the Science C Council in Sweden, where you were still residing, and with everything and with your complaint, and bringing the whole awareness as of the neural manipulation and of the coalition, and of your being targeted. What was the response of the Science Council in Sweden at that time?
I will tell you, and this is pretty important information because by that time, as this was not known, and this was talking about a little bit too much because I mean V2K is a system that is by signals putting voices in your head so you can hear voices speaking to you. This is one of the things. That's not the worst torture, and is stimuli. Stimuli is something that is going on very often, especially in the beginning. In my case, it was 24/7 almost, and it kept me almost in such a shape that I would not like to show myself in front of my friends and so on. It was not possible actually. So this kind of weapons and what they can do, you can just imagine the memory, the whole procedures in the in your whole complex brain is actually they are able to manipulate parts of it. And in the beginning you might not even discover it, but sooner or later you discover more or less everything. So it's not easy to target a human that knows exactly what they can do. Yes.
Yeah, and what so what did the Science Council do in response to your complaint?
Yes, when we had the evidence, by that time the evidence was pretty poor, but obvious, I would say. So what we did was that I was in the Science Council on the highest level, and my case was believed by the people who were handling the case before it was handed over to the chief. The chief of the neurological district on Karolinska Institute. His name is Martin Ingvar, and he is still in this business. Martin Ingvar is the in if you look at the history, his father was the most famous brain scientist. So he took over after his father, and he is and is head of the state, and was at this time head of the State Department that took the decision about my case. And what he replied by that time, by this time, as we know, it was a long time ago. He just replied that these kind of weaponry do not exist at all.
So this was a cover-up by the high scientific levels in Sweden on behalf of the deep state. Is that what happened?
That is what happened
Yeah,
pretty clearly.
now you mentioned the Karolinska Institute. Is that like a scientific institute in Sweden that is covering this up?
Yes, and working on it, and is leading in some fields of the development of this also. It's called the digital twin today. They have developed the system so far that they actually have a copy of you, your brain, especially in their supercomputer. So this is called your digital twin. Your digital twin is not just the brain, it is the whole body as well. And the brain is the human computer, which They also call it, they call it a biocomputer twin simulations they do on humans, which is the civilians in Sweden that are subjected to this kind of torture. And what we have seen lately is that it's done on students in the opposite direction, in the positive manner. So it's helping them study, it's helping them understand better and knowing how to study in a more efficient way. And when the question was raised to one of these persons, would you like to get rid of this system, or is this what do you say about it? No, never, ever. It helps me in my studying, and it makes my grades much better. So there is also this going on the later. This is something we discovered just a few years ago, the first times,
So it
and it is pretty well spread as well.
is that what you would call the transhumanist agenda with artificial intelligence?
Oh yes, it is a pure case of testing it in reality in the positive way, using the weaponry that they did on me and on you, Alfred, is a completely different story. It's like
But when you say a positive way, are you saying that this is positive for society? Do you recommend that or no?
No. I say that this is positive for the students and they don't want to get rid of it. But this is young people
This is
that are.
taking this is taking artificial intelligence to enhance their cognitive abilities. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Yeah, exactly. And if you could get that, and you are young and so on, you d may not think that far, and that deep around the subject. So you might just care about the studies and the grades. But this is an intrusion. This is a completion of actually disrespecting humanity in all manners, I would say,
So,
however it's used.
yeah, so this is entraining the human being into AI, artificial intelligence, which is a step toward the robotization of human beings. Right, and that's being done under the Karolinska Institute in Sweden.
Yes, and there is a very long history back in time that might be for another interview. Actually, I could tell a very short story. That was when the race biology, which it was called in the beginning, the Race Biology Study Center in Uppsala was actually inviting Hitler by Göring. Göring was living in Stockholm and having a Stockholm a girlfriend in Stockholm and so on. And he discovered this. And after that meeting, when Hitler and Göring was visiting Uppsala, they were introducing the Aryan superiority. So this is much deeper than you can even dream about.
Amazing. Now, right, so that's a very important point that should be. Now, as I recall, also, this is part of Bill Gates, who is the funder of the New World Order and of the transhumanist agenda. He has been given, he is funding part of this in Sweden as well, and considers Sweden to be his second home. Could you talk about that?
Exactly, and that was pretty amazing. In the beginning, when I was studying this, I discovered that Sweden was in the lead in some of these developments, and have been long, 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 long time. So this took me to study what and how did this become, I mean, a burning point in the world, Stockholm, in this area. And that was because of the Rockefellers. They actually started funding Karolinska, and then Bill Gates, when he came into the picture, it became a little bit of a boost of the whole subject. So now the twin, the digital twin is something that is going to be the new health care, so to speak, the new health care, which will be on distance and be able to, what they claim, cure a lot of diseases and so on from distance. But what is hidden behind all of this is the control agenda, because what comes with it is a complete neurological connection, which is also governing your mind. So humans that are under this system, that do not know. That's why I told you before that when you know that you are a victim, victimized by a weapon, then you can do something about it. But if you don't know it, there is another picture developing, and you can see it yourself if you think a little bit. How you can then be transformed as a human into something that you are not actually. So that is what I found out. So Bill Gates is, yes, he is calling Stockholm his second home, more or less, and he is funding a lot together with the Rockefellers. So the Rockefeller Brain Institute in New York is ran by Swedish scientists,
Right.
most of them, and the head of the whole thing is also a Swede.
Right. And so this runs counter to the public image that Sweden has been trying to portray as a benevolent, modernistic force in the world, whereas in fact, what Sweden is doing, it's part of the anti-human transhumanist agenda to transform human into the robotoid artificial intelligence host, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, into hybrids for sure in the beginning, I believe, into hybrids, and then what comes after that, it says itself that then we are partly not human anymore. So
Right. Now, you at this time then, you were searching for solutions. So you went to Belgium because you had heard about the Faraday cage. And what was your experience when you went to the Faraday cage and in Belgium?
oh yes, this is a very interesting question, because A Faraday cage, for people who don't know, is a cage which should not be it should not be able to cross with any kind of frequency waves into this Faraday cage. If it's built under the right circumstances and classified, which our cage was. It was actually we were borrowing this from an electronic company that was testing their products in it, and we were pretty many people there at this testing. So it was probably 20 people there, and. We had equipment and specialists to handle the equipment to measure the waves that we could see as the so to speak enemy waves, the weaponized waves. And we could see them outside the Faraday cage, and we should not be able to see them inside the Faraday cage. But now we come to the. For us, it was a mystery by this time. We didn't know much about things like scalar waves and so on. So we went into the Faraday cage one by one and was measuring outside first and seeing the weaponized waves and then inside. And we could see the same waves. There were no difference at all. So this means that there was another technology involved. And when we discovered what kind of this was Henning Witte, the lawyer, he was very deep into this with a professor that is called actually the reincarnation of Tesla. His name is Professor Miles, and he knows which a few very few scientists know what this is, and this is scalar waves, and scalar waves go through everything. There's nothing that can stop them, nothing at all. So if you use a carrier wave that is scalar based, then you can transport whatever weapon or waves inside it you wish. That is and was the conclusion we had to draw after this visit. So this measurement in this Faraday cage, which was a disappointment, but it actually took us further, much further. So it was a success, I would say, now afterwards, because the scalar waves we got Henning Witte got to know Professor Miles pretty well. He's half German, half Swedish, this lawyer, and Professor Miles is German. So they speak and they were inviting each other to their homes, and he was showing up things in front of the film camera of Henning's Witte. That was pretty amazing things, how you could transfer electricity in the air, for example, which no one at this time know, but now I read in the paper just a few days ago that they suddenly discovered that they could send electricity through the air. So the military, as we say, as I say, is that they are 40, 50, 60 years ahead of the common electronics, for example. And that is what they wear also in this case. So it's a pretty obvious. Yes.
Right. Now, you also talk about a trip to Visby during the political week in Sweden. Is there a significance to that that you'd like to share?
Yes, I would like to, very shortly. This was the political week. It's arranged in Visby on an island, very medieval city with a surrounding wall that is from hundreds of years ago, and. This political week is held inside this city, inside these walls. So when I went there with Henning Witte, he is not a targeted individual, and a few others that was targeted individuals, and we wanted to go there because we wanted to have our speech, because we had a speech on the square. And that went pretty well, but what happened to me was pretty awful, because as soon as I should go through the wall, the opening in the wall, I was almost, you know, the weapons were on such a high level that I went blank in the mind. I was blanking my mind totally. So I couldn't function inside the walls. And this was probably or obviously done by the military. So I should not be able to function this week and be there and walk around, meet politicians and inform them about this and try to do something about the problem. So that's all about that for now.
Right. And so this is, when you say the military, are you talking about a global entity or a Swedish entity? What is the entity that you think is targeting you and is carrying this out? Is this a global, or is it compartmentalized by country or by category of TI? Could you tell us about how you conceptualized it so far?
Yes. What I have discovered by deep studies is that the United States started the MK Ultra. Yes. And the MK Ultra was the paperclip people, the old Nazis and so on, involved also. And this MK Ultra started up on a wild, big scale in the United States. Bill Clinton was actually trying to excuse from the government that this was done towards the civilians, and he promised that now it's shut down, but that was a pure lie. But the point is, and the answer to your question now is like this: some countries are co-developers, I would call it. Sweden is one of them. A stronghold in this development. One of the strongest, actually, outside the United States. One of them, at least, for sure. And what we discovered when we went further on, was that there was some people, some some whistleblowers that was actually telling us that this was more or less sold out to countries to be able to use on their civilian population.
Wow.
So this is how it was spread, and 180 something countries was into this when I checked last time, and that was a couple of years ago. So this is pretty crucial to speak about what you just asked me here, because if you look at, for example, Europe, it is, I mean, the numbers of targeted individuals are growing on such an expansional scale that I couldn't dream about it myself in the wildest dreams. So this is a controlled society that's being built up. I would say that, and this scalar based technology that hooks up a person for life until you die. You can't get rid of it. You can't disconnect, so to speak. So you are in other people's hands, so to speak. So you are not governing your own life. And can something sound much worse when it's done in secrecy?
Right. Exactly. So that's quite a research finding, and also a discovery that you're now bringing to humanity to take action. Now, you went to Montauk, Long Island, at this point. Could you talk about that?
Yes. Why I was invited there was a completely other reason. It was about breathing technologies. A woman that had been writing, I think it was 14 books about the breathing technologies. She wanted to try to learn me as a targeted individual by weapons how to breathe and use my breath to overcome some situations that are pretty hard to overcome. And so she did. But on this Long Island, you have Montauk also. And she told me that you have to go out there and have a look at the radar antenna is still standing there. So I went out there, and this was the first time I saw a place where they actually started the MK Ultra. They did the Philadelphia experiment there. They did a lot of other kind of extraterrestrial research on that spot as well. So I went there, and when I walked out to the antenna, it took me 40 minutes, and I could see all the way openings to the ground, to the base, the military base that was beneath it. I know a person, he's still alive. He's actually still the only living being that was experimented upon on Montauk. And he was just 8 years when they began. And they took him there, and his it was a very special story. I will not go into any details, but it was a horrific study been done upon humans at that place. So I understand why the rumors have gotten all the people on Long Island to be a little bit scared when they walk out there, because it's pretty awful to see this antenna, and it's aimed towards New York, and it's huge radar antenna. Radar is also one of the technologies used in this. This targeting weaponry.
Right. Now, at this point, a very tragic event happened, and Rowney killed or died. Could you tell us, go into more background on that and how it was that she died?
Yes, she was actually from Finland. By that time, she moved to Norway. So she lived in Norway, and she was getting very, very hard radiated for a couple of days. Very, very, very hard radiated. And that feeling is you have to go through it. Actually, it's hard to explain, but it's awful. And she called me up and told me all about this, and she said that it's so bad that I can't walk, I can't function anymore. And then she said suddenly that she wanted to go back to Finland, her home country, to be hospitalized there instead. So she went over to Finland and lived with a good friend, and sadly. I spoke to the doctor 2 nights later, and the doctor said to me that she will die tonight. So she died pretty rapidly, and it was it's hard to say exactly what was the reason, but I know. One thing, and one thing for sure, that she was radiated very hardly in the beginning of this.
Right. So you think that directed energy weapons were used on her in some form to kill her?
Yes, at least to hurt her enough to kill her.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Right. And did they do this because she was a whistleblower? Was that it? And to or as did they do this as an experiment? I mean, what is the intent of the psychopathic force behind this? Is this being directed by an AI? Is this being directed by humans? What is the force behind this?
This is what I would say. She was active all the time. All the time. She was pretty old at this time. And she was not giving up at all. She was almost just working on even harder and harder. She was pretty badly targeted all the time during this work. that we did together. But she did some actions herself, and she wanted to get into the, I think it was the Norwegian government closer up. And during this work, it could have been that. I'm not sure. I'm not telling you that it was, but I'm saying that it's a big possibility. That's why, because Norway is a stronghold also for the HAARP facilities of the Northern Europe.
Right. Now, you ran in a marathon?
Yes. I will tell a little bit about it. It was like this. I was so hardly targeted that I could barely function during times because I was active. I was running the coalition. I was having a meeting, I was traveling, I was all the time in action, just like Ronnie. But what I decided, I was a runner from childhood. I was competing when I was 13, 14, 16, 17 even, running longer runs, like a couple of 10 kilometers and so on by that time already. So I took up my running and I decided to do the impossible. I should run a marathon, even though they targeted me so hard that I could barely go out of the bed. And I started to run 10 kilometers every morning and every night, every evening, excuse me, every evening. And sometimes, at this time, I had tried to move on the countryside in Sweden, out in a place nowhere, in the middle of the woods, so I could run on beautiful roads, in sand roads from the 18th century and so on. So I was running and training, and each now and then I found myself laying down on the stones on these roads and screaming because they shot me so hard that in the bone marrow. The bone marrow was like burning. So it was almost impossible to run. So sometimes I had to stop and lay down and scream or try to come back to functioning again, and I always did, and I continued, and I ran the marathon, believe it or not. The point is that what I didn't know that that I got very probably hurted by these weapons when they shot me, and it was actually in the neck. I did an operation in the neck to survive, actually. Otherwise, I should die because the disc was pressing towards the core of the spine and was taking away the airflow in the spine. So part of my functions were disabling slowly. I couldn't move good, and I couldn't walk, especially not at all in the end. So the last year I could not walk before the operation, but after the operation it took a few years, and I was walking, and now I'm walking and functioning again, pretty okay.
Right. Now, at some point, you had to leave your home country, Sweden. How did that happen? And what was all the journeys? I know you spent time in Russia. Could you just go into all of that that happened?
No, I was just visiting Moscow for 1.5 week. It was just a try to get some shielding against this weaponry, which was CISO. But anyway, why I had to leave my home country was because I was so badly injured by these weapons. So it went worse and worse, and I had to move. I had to move out of the country. So I did. And I'm happy for that, because I'm functioning better now, at least, because in Stockholm they have the state of the art of the equipment, so they can could go much deeper in my brain, my thoughts, and into all kind of different things, were much sharper in Sweden. So
right.
I found it very, very, very relieving to leave my home country, yes. But I did never want to leave my home country. So this is just because of the terrorism that I'm subjected to.
Right. And so you had to go through the challenge of being incarnated and born and raised inside Sweden, which is probably one of the most malevolent countries as far as it, through the Karolinska Institute and the science, and it being one of the leading edge countries in the transhumanist agenda, along with the United States. And so now you can report on that, because through all this, I mean, it's been very painful, but you are one of the leading whistleblowers. Now, that led to your trip to Geneva and your meeting with a special rapporteur on torture, Professor Niels Melzer, inside the Human Rights Council. Now, this is kind of a paradox, because at one level, many people in the truth movement say, oh, the United Nations is part of a deep state. And yet at the same time, we have the special rapporteur on torture, Niels Melzer, inside the Human Rights Council of the United Nations. You were able to make a trip to Geneva in the United Nations and bring this message there, and he was able to take it. But so I'm going to turn this whole area over to you so you can explain it. So you can explain it to us.
Yes, exactly, because this is a little bit of a paradox, because if you look at it, as you said, the United Nations is very involved and corrupted. It's actually very, very corrupted. And this information is not coming from my mouth. It's coming from Niels Melzer's mouth himself. He told us, me and Henning Witte, that the lawyer went to Geneva. And we went into the Human Rights Council, which no one is allowed to actually just press. And the people from the United Nations is allowed in there. There is very strict control of this. And we got actually something that we got through a newspaper, so we could act as journalists. So we had journalist badges. My father, by the way, was a journalist, and that's why I'm a victim of this. And I would like to fold this into this report actually, because my father was revealing a story. He was awarded a journalist on the biggest paper in Sweden, Dagens Nyheter, Daily News in English, the biggest paper in Sweden. And he was the top journalist, one of them. And he was writing most front pages some years, and they were competing about this and so on. And my father went and made one reportage, and this reportage was why I am in this. It was because Russian mind control containers were shipped over, and they were not by legal means. They were smuggled, and they were taken over by Saab. If you know what Saab is,
Yes,
it's one of the leading manufacturers of weaponry in and even fighting aircrafts. So they are on a very high level, and they actually in some way got in hold of I think it was five containers of mind control equipment. This my father made on the first page, mind control containers from Russia. Wow, that was like a big blow, because he was then connected. When he was 50 years of age, he discovered that he was a victim himself by this weaponry. So this is really something that is sounding appearing like it should be some kind of out of there. It should not be able to happen, especially not in a country like Sweden. Yeah. Like you just said, it's a number one country in many senses, and we are actually. Sweden is a very strong country, big companies, very big companies. Ericsson is one of them, and they are owned by the same owners as Saab. And they invented 5G. 5G, yeah.
Oh yeah. Now let me go back and if you could describe when you as a targeted individual went to the UN and met with Meltzer and made an did you make an address and a presentation at the UN? Could you describe that?
Yes, me and Henning was meeting with a special rapporteur, Nils Meltzer, Professor Nils Meltzer, directly after he announced the name of these weapons, and that these weapons were a big problem around the world. And his presentation was not maybe so clear, because he had to speak these weapons are not known, so people don't know that they exist even. And when he speaks about it, he spoke about it, and he presented it as the name of these weapons is cyber torture. And then we went very happy, because now we have a name on this, and that's why our web page is cyber-torture, because we had air catch before that. But after his announcement, we changed and we started up a task force that did the work with the United Nations, and we informed the whole targeted individual community in the world, I promise you. And we were arranging one targeted individual day also, and supporting it with materials and so on for 1 year. And that this was at the same time as this trip to Geneva.
Right.
And yeah.
Yeah, now, so this is how the information, and it seems that with Special Rapporteur Niels Melzer at the UN, and with your coalition, you have a strong information agenda in getting this information out. Now, I want to ask you this
Yes,
question. Go ahead.
I just want to say that what I heard from the special rapporteur himself,
Yes,
me
please.
and Henning Witte, was this, that he's working in an environment where more or less you never know who is corrupted. So he was saying this to us. But now I'm gonna tell you the most interesting thing about the trip to the United Nations. And this is something that never went out in any papers anywhere. But I got to know it because I was on place. There was a granted amount from Norway to the cyber torture investigation. This amount was huge from Norway. And the day before the announcement, it was withdrawn. So the whole investigation was never becoming what it was intended to be. Become.
And this so and was that because you and Henning Witte were involved, or was that a false flag from the beginning that it was just a fake thing from the beginning?
Yeah, it was a false flag thing from the beginning.
Right. Now, in terms of active measures. One measure is information, getting this information out to the public. But then there's a second area, which is active measures of prohibition, legislation, treaties, etc. Does the coalition or does Niels Melzer have any active measures that are in place to stop this?
I can tell you exactly. Niels Melzer went on with his investigation without the granted money, so he could not do it in the extent he was planned. But he carried it out just in the way it should be. And in the questionnaire towards almost all countries in the whole wide world about this subject, cyber torture, he never got one answer. And he sent it out to almost all countries in the world, but never got one answer. And when he never gets an answer, he says, that's the answer. That's the answer. That's how they do.
Yeah, because they had gone because the world it had signed on to the transhumanist agenda, which you had mentioned earlier in the interview that the United States and Sweden had sent out this transhumanist agenda to the 188 nations, had signed on to it, correct?
Yes, but you have to think about that this was sold into countries, as I understand it. I will not go in deeper to this too, because this is a very sensitive subject. I know more, but I don't want to say too much about this because this is something that is very sensitive. But I can tell you like this, in the beginning, it was not all these countries were doing this at the same time. It has been growing since many years, many. And today, I would say that all countries almost in the world is involved.
Okay. There are a number of questions, let's say a number of questions that I want to follow up. The first follow-up question, and just to see, is this, because we have been involved in research that goes back to 1982, because as you know, in 1982, we were delegates, NGO delegates to the Outer Space Conference and to the second special conference on disarmament in New York City. And this was after the Falklands War between the England and Argentina. But that was really a false war. And it's thought that what is occurring is that, and this is a bit esoteric, but that one of the things that's happening to the planet is that there's a sentient, inorganic, artificial intelligence that is invading Earth and trying to terraform Earth. And that's what's behind the transhumanist agenda. And we have done a lot of work in this. And if you go to our website, exopolitics.com, on the right-hand menu, there's a whole thing. There's an agenda item that says AI, artificial intelligence. What are your thoughts on the possibility that part of the force behind this is that the Earth, this is almost science fiction, is being invaded by a sentient, inorganic, artificial intelligence? That's the force behind this. Have you heard that?
It was presented like a sentient world simulation, but it is not a simulation. It is a controlled system by AI, and this, if it is organic, this AI, or if it is built by what I would say in that case, at least a startup from in the United States, it might be too complex and too advanced, actually, from the beginning. I don't want to say anything more about it, and I don't have the answer, but I can give what I believe is the most probable scenario here, and that is that this AI that is governing a lot of humans in Sweden today, it is human controlled. I don't know in what extent it is controlled by other forces. Other forces, I mean, from other planets, from other galaxies, even. and so on. AI is something very complex in itself, and there is a very aggressive AI, and there is also very the opposite. So you have a mixture which is done upon you. Why I know this is because this is what targeted people like you and me are telling me from all over the world, all over the world. And
Right.
it's very the same program run all over. It is no big difference at all. It is around the same AI with other means. So what I would say is that it's up to you to decide what kind of AI, where it's from. But this sentient world AI that is involved in matters, personal matters, which also have the supercomputers' knowledge about everything almost. So what I have been introduced to sometimes is the positive side of this AI. And it's fabulous, it's fantastic, and I understand people that they might fall for this for a while at least, but to live with it is another thing, and to know everything about everything is not just an advantage. It can also be a disadvantage in some positions. So this is a sensitive subject
Right,
to deal with.
exactly. Now, let me go to another question in terms of proactive steps. And I'm going to go to a share screen so that you and the audience can actually see this. And this is something that was very active for a while. And I just want to bring it up again. And I'm just going to put it in the full screen. Can you see this, where it says the Model Statute and World Treaty Conference banning directed energy and neurotech mind control
Yes.
weapons? Okay, so
Yes.
this goes back a few years to the very beginning of ILCAC and all of its activities. There were a lot of, and what we did, and the background on this is that Canada, back when Princess Diana was alive, became interested in the issue of landmines because they were exploding all over the place. And Canada sponsored it, and there was a landmine treaty conference which was successful and outlawed all landmines. And Princess Diana sponsored that. And that's why she was assassinated. It had nothing to do with the royal family or the department store heir or anything. It's because she was successful in banning landmines. So we took that model of the World Treaty Conference and we said, let's make a World Treaty Conference to ban neurotech, in other words, neurological weapons, mind control, directed energy weapons. And a treaty conference is where you develop the legislation, a treaty, and you have nations come together and they sign on and they ban it from the world. And we actually did this. There's a model statute, and a lot of people at the NGO level signed on to it. This was at the beginning of of the Ilkach era, okay? And this was something that I was very active in doing because my background is as an international lawyer. And I was active, you know, in Canada. I spoke to the foreign minister that was successful in doing the landmine treaty, actually called me personally on the phone here in Vancouver to meet with me, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so this is something that was a proactive measure that is out there, but we never moved with it that much. It kind of is there, right? So I wanted to ask you whether you think that this is something that we could take first to the coalition, you know, modernize it and update it, and take it to the coalition and then to Niels Melzer and say, look, we did a landmines treaty conference out of Canada with Princess Di, and it was successful. And this is a model that has been successful. What do you think? I just want to get your thoughts.
I want to say, first of all, Niels Melzer resigned after his period, earlier than his period, because he didn't get no answers. He is replaced now by a woman that is taking his place, continuing his work and so on. But he is at the Red Cross right now, doing some work, and as I understand it, he will never forget what he went through when he saw what was happening on such a grand scale with his narrow weapons. So. I think it's a very good suggestion, and it should be presented. It could be presented to her.
Okay. So then, what I'm going to do, with your permission, is I will take this and I will modify it a little bit, and I will bring it to you, so you can bring it to the coalition, and then we can take some steps, because this is a proactive measure. See, there's different ways. One is that you have an information agenda, which is to educate the public with information. But then you have a proactive agenda with active measures, like a treaty conference to ban all these weapons. You see? And this is in addition to an information agenda. So would it be okay if I brought this to you at the coalition, and then we developed it, and then we took it to the UN and to, you know, where we did that again, and we started this up? Would you be open to that?
Yes, the answer is a clear yes. It could be brought to more places than just to her.
Okay.
But she should be very interested in this.
Okay, good. Excellent. I'm going to take this out of share now. I'm going to stop share. And we have another subject that we want to bring up. And how was it that you came to be a judge at the Natural and Common Law Tribunal for Public Health and Justice? Could you talk about that?
Yes. Yes, I am a person that want to do the utmost to stop this, and if someone knows this, It's you, Alfred. Alfred Lambert Weber. You know exactly, and you are the head judge, and you asked me actually if I would like to be a special judge upon the neural monitoring side, and I accepted that with a big happy smile actually, because I see that what we can do with this cease and desist orders that we can send out when the psychiatry gets people which they have no rights actually to bring with police force at your home, knocking on your door, bringing you to the psych ward and saying that you are not okay in the head. And there is no proof of this except the doctors and the neurologists are into this, some of them. And of course this is in the game, so to speak. So this is for me it's very natural to continue as a judge and to try to bring the law closer and closer in our hearts. What I mean with that is that the law in itself, the international law and so on, which is not practiced in a lawful manner, as I see it, we are now trying to get this cease and desist orders and these things all, but as we have tried now on a few different targeted individuals that have been subjected to this force, they don't even read the papers, more or less. They are very, very ignorant. This is something that we have to speak about, how to serve it. And it should be served on a higher level than just to the doctors. It has to be served on a higher level, I suppose.
Yeah, good. And as you know, we're going to be having a meeting of the tribunal next Sunday, September 18th at 8 p.m. Central European Time. I think I've sent you a Zoom, and so perhaps you can raise at this time. We'll be dealing with certain issues, but if you and I could at that time raise this issue with the tribunal so that we can then start bringing proactive active measures in terms of cease and desist orders and writs of mandamus in the neural manipulation and directed energy weapons area. So I look forward to working with you on the tribunal as well as with the treaty conference area, which is more inside the coalition and then in the international arena. So we can become active again now in this new era. So thank you very much. I'm going to go
Excellent.
out of share now, but I just wanted to give that to the audience. So I think that we've covered all of the topics that we had talked about it, that we had noted before. Now, are there any topics that
Any
you have
topics?
wanted to bring up that we haven't touched on yet? that you think?
Well, we are having in the coalition a technical group that is working with all kind of measurements to try to do something about the subject of shielding and stopping and freeing people from this. But we will see how it goes. But I wish them very big luck, because this could be of crucial importance for life and death matters, I would even say. I can also say something very sad. Pretty not long time ago, actually, a man that was our was doing this picture you saw of this woman holding up her hands and cyber torture. He was a graphical, and he was working on the Danish television number one, which is the biggest TV station in Denmark, and he made these pictures and many more. We have posted a lot of different materials with very heavy messages, and his name was Johan Gran, and what is very tragic is that he committed suicide because he couldn't take the torture. They were not letting him sleep for sometimes 2 to 3 weeks. He was not, you know, he was shaking almost in the whole body and so on. It was awful. It was like they did the first 3 years towards me. So I understood him and I supported him, and I said, don't do anything like just suicide. Don't please. And I tried to, and I kept him alive 2 years, because he was very close of committing suicide already from the beginning. So this is how hard this is actually being played out on humanity. This is just an example. I can talk about this is very sad. There is hundreds of death people that commit suicide. Is actually they do such a hard torture that you start to think about a way to leave this, and you can't stop it. So the only way
right.
is to commit suicide. So it's a very sad and tragic thing to say, but it's very important in the matter of why we do this work.
Yeah.
It's very important to actually tell this. This is the truth. This is why I'm committed to try to stop this. They tried with me as well, I can tell. So this is not uncommon.
Right. Well, that's certainly a tragedy that occurred. So people can go to cyber-torture.com, and we'll put your email address, which will be down in the video description here, so that people can contact you via email. And we're going to be working on active, not only on public information measures, but now, as we discussed, we're going to be working on active measures, both with the coalition in in the treaty conference in legislation. We even got, when we were doing that, we got a lot of cities to sign on to it. There's a tremendous lot of support around the world. And then we'll be meeting with the tribunal, and we'll be issuing our cease and desist orders, and also that people can come to the tribunal website at peaceandspace.org, and they can download these forms and these orders that they themselves can serve on the perpetrators. So this is a way that people can take what's called self-help. And this is something that we can also do. So this has been an extraordinary interview. We've been here for about 90 minutes. It's a wonderful interview. Is there anything else you'd like to say at this moment?
Yes, there is one thing I was missing out on, and that is that we have a new whistleblower that is introduced in the War Tribunal as well, that is also learning about narrow monitoring and this kind of crimes. And she's a tremendous personality, as you know, and we will carry out good work. So we are far from alone. We are backed up by all people, more or less, that gets the right information about it.
Wonderful, wonderful. So I just want to say that this has been, we've been with Magnus Olsen, who is the founder and coordinator of the LCATCH Coalition Against Cyber Torture, and is a judge, a tribunal judge on the Natural and Common Law Tribunal for Public Health and Justice at peaceandspace.org. Magnus, we salute you. We support you in all of your work. And thank you very much for being with us. Thank you, everyone. Okay, tell me.
Thank you very much, Alfred, for this interview. I missed our interviews. We were doing interviews every month, almost before, you remember in the old days.
Now I'm
a bit older, and I have my glasses and my beard. Otherwise, I'm the same human.
Right. Well, we're now starting a new wheel. Good enough. Well, yeah. Thank you very much. Until
Thank
our
you
next
very
one.
Much, Alfred.
Until
Thank
our
you.
Next one.